Accession number 3936, reel 5.
Mr. Fleece, reel 5.
Well, it was... he did allow us a great deal.
The commandant,
and provided a lot of facilities, and we were used to the camp life anyhow. He had some silly ideas. We had no palliasses there. This was something new to me, sleeping boards. They were hard boards. They were slightly curved so that you couldn't roll off either side. But you get used to them as well. Yes. And he didn't, some of them made beds out of it because we had fleas, so they jumped up, you see, and we wanted to be off the floor. But he didn't allow that sort of thing, the regulations. And we had to fold our blankets in exact the way he wanted it. But otherwise, he couldn't care about what we did. He was ordered to build watchtowers around the camp. So he built the watchtowers around the camp, you know, like you see in the concentration camps. And then he condemned them. He said his men would catch colds if they would go up there.
What type of people were the administrators? This sounds like something of a dead-end job for him and the other officers when they could have been in the war.
Probably. I didn't feel their intellect was awfully strong. No, they were decent people. They had the right accent and went through the, what we call in German, the Ochsen Tour. You know, he went from one position to the next one, then he was promoted. And they didn't know what to do with him, so they put him into charge of a camp where he couldn't do any harm.
Were you tempted to stay in Australia?
No. Many of my friends were, and quite a few did stay, as you probably know, eventually. But you see, I had my family and my connections in London, and you see, I wasn't new. I was working in England and in London for 6 years before the war, and my wife and our business. No, I didn't mind what we had to go through. I wanted to go back.
What was it that got you released in the end?
As I told you, they set up a tribunal, and they had various categories for age or sickness and hardship reasons and all sorts of other things. But my wife insisted that she wanted to be released under category 19, as I happen to know the number, which was as convinced anti-Nazi. And I was released under the same category. And we got informed of the release, my brother and I, where he, as the elder, was older than I am, so he was asked in and told us we were released. And he said, when can we go? He said, no going home. We have no Australian immigration papers, so you are here on English soil in the camp, and you have to wait until suitable shipping arrangements can be made. So we were interned for another, I don't know for how long. We volunteered to go to stay with my brother in Sydney. No, nothing doing, regulations. In fact, I read the parliamentary report Hansard you kindly gave me, and Mrs. Rathbone made an awful song and dance about it, talking about deprivation and humiliating conditions. I mean, we were still separated from our families, and that was the only deprivation we could think of. I mean, otherwise we were treated all right.
How did you establish to the tribunal that you were an anti-Nazi?
I couldn't. Somebody had to do it for me. I still don't know how it was done. Somebody must have done it for me. They went through my records, probably, found through the records of the tribunal and said, well, there's nothing against that man. He came already as an anti-Nazi in 1934 or 33, started business in 44. He has wonderful credentials. And my friends, I mean, Sir Stafford Cripps was one of our customers and friends, and then Sir Maurice Hankey. They all testified probably for us.
What did this internment make you think about British freedom and justice, on which we so much pride ourselves?
Well, that's a difficult, difficult one. You see, I had these two very bad experiences. The tribunal I could explain somehow. I think I told you last time I tried to justify it even to my fellow internees that Britain was in a difficult position. They had to safeguard against the possibility of a fifth column. And public relations, the public had to be satisfied that something is being done okay. But then that treatment on board ship was a bit horrible. When I read later, you know, to what length they went even in Parliament to talk about us bloody foreigners, so to speak, you know, to do justice to us. How they tried to rectify it, how they tried to compensate us, and they did compensate us in money terms, of course. What else could they do? A feeling came back, well, it's all right after all, you know. And no bitter feelings whatsoever were left. And what I saw later, you know, how the British people stuck together against Hitler and how they managed during the war, which was, as many people would testify and will tell you, which one of the time where everybody, you see, did his best and her best, spirit which is now completely lost. No, I got all my belief in back in this country, and I was often asked, where would you go if you had to emigrate again? So I said, if Hitler came, for instance, so I said, I would commit suicide, but not go anywhere else. I don't know whether I would, but I said it.
What do you think you missed by being interned, or gained?
Gained. A lot of experience. Mind you, that's hindsight. But I think I would have missed that for anything. It was a very, very interesting experience for me. You know, what would I have done in the meantime? When the sirens went, I would have gone into an air raid shelter. Perhaps I would have been bombed and killed. Would have fed hungry vegetarians in the restaurant and non-vegetarians. No, I have no bitter feelings whatsoever. Worthwhile stating a little bit of Tatura, the particular camp we were in. We were already had our release in our pocket, so we knew it was only for a day or for a week or months or perhaps 2 months, so we didn't bother about anything. But this was run on communist lines.
Why was that?
Well, they did it exactly the same as they tried to do in Hay, and there was no countermeasure taken. And there it was really the same. The boys who had to do the dirty work. We had to get up at 4 o'clock, and or it was a bit later there, and lay the fire and do the cooking, which was a chore later. They volunteered first for the kitchen because they were starved, but later they were all suffering from indigestion rather. And they had to do this work because the police would beat them up if they wouldn't do their work. But then one day they clapped together. And of course the camp leaders talked all the time, probably split in left-wing and right-wing communists and Trotskyists and God knows what. And one morning they said, no, we finished, we don't do it. So we had no breakfast. And then at the roll call, which was a usual thing, the officer asked the same question, any complaints or so. One of our chaps had the same who organized the anti-communist things in Hay. He stepped forward and very smartly said, yes, sir. So what is it? We had no breakfast today. Oh, why is that? And then, of course, he had the chance to explain the whole thing. And from then on, the communist regime was at an end. When they learned that there was were beatings up, and the Australian authorities took over. They did the cooking and everything. I don't know whether it was really an improvement, but they took over everything from then on until we left. So I don't know what happened later.
So what did you do to pass the time?
Oh, we built ourselves, my brother and I, we built ourselves a nice little room. We had we bought some calico and made a ceiling, and we studied and helped each other, you know, examined each other's progress we made. My brother studied philosophy, and I helped him there, and we are still discussing philosophy when he visits me, and I carried on with economics.
I take it your voyage back was rather different.
The journey back? Well, we were on a troop ship, free human beings. We could do what we liked. We could get up when we liked. We could have a cup of morning tea if we went to the canteen. We had some money. And we suffered and enjoyed life the same as the soldiers on board ship. Terribly overcrowded, of course. But it was a war, and everybody was in the same boat, literally. And my admiration for the merchant navy, which it was absolutely wonderful, these people, during the war. We made only one journey, and the anxiety when we had to go through the U-packs, the U-boat packs, you know. Always afraid that something might happen. And then we arrived in Liverpool, and we were divided again into two groups. One group went back into internment camps. I don't know, for extra checking or something. But we got our ticket to London and were free. And these poor chaps had to go back through the U-boat pack again and again and again and again. Wonderful job.
Did your wife know when you were coming back?
No. Well, this is a story by itself. It is more a personal, rather funny story, really. Well, I can just as well add it, as you have some tape left. She knew I was released and that I was due to come sometime. But I smartened myself up at Euston Station when we arrived from Liverpool there, and I went straight back to the restaurant. There she was. Oh, he said, how wonderful that you are back. We are short people. Can you help peeling carrots? That was my homecoming. He said, well, can't we have a minute to talk to each other? He said, not before 11:30. The lunch has to be ready. But then it was all right after that.
Did you suffer any disadvantages afterwards? From having a criminal record, as it were?
No. I don't think so. Except when I put in my application for naturalization, I was interviewed for about 8 hours. They had an enormous dossier, a real suitcase full of stuff, and they knew everything I did from the beginning, coming to this country, why I changed my bank and all sorts of things, and why I changed my profession and what I did with the money and all the rest of it. And my record of the internment was there too, but it was not against me. I got my naturalization papers. And another funny thing, which happened 2 years later, somebody rang up from the Foreign Office. They wanted to interview me, and they interviewed me whether I want a job as the Control Commission of Germany. So I discussed it with my wife, and she said, yes, if you want to. I can manage the Vega alone. We didn't open in the evening then. We had it a bit easier, and she had it a bit easier. If you want to go, yes, I said, for half a year, I would like to go. So they made me a lieutenant colonel. They made me a principal control officer, equivalent rank lieutenant colonel. First internee as a foreigner, enemy alien, and then a lieutenant colonel in the occupation forces. But that's a different story.
Yes, but that must be peculiar, being in occupation of your own country.
Well, it was in a way. It was in a way because there was always a danger of clashing loyalties. So I was asked that question, naturally. And I told my boss right on the first day when he welcomed me to his team that I believe that in this particular case there is no clash of loyalties. But as soon as they would clash, I would report it to him and offer my resignation. And he accepted that. And there was never a clash, because I wanted to Germany to be built up in a decent sort of way. We had a Labour government, and that's exactly what I wanted. If it didn't turn out that way, it was not my fault.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything else that you
No, I don't think so. I certainly shall think of lots of things later, but that always happens.